While in the hospital, she will eventually gain enough strength to have a paniculectomy, a surgery which will essentially remove the excess skin and tissue from her abdomen. And I
think this is my penis. And the doctor said 40 or 50 pounds of it continue to be water weight. So in actuality, when she cuts and removes the watery tissue and whatever, it should be pretty flat. Let them have one more swipe at me, and then I never want to see a hospital again as long as I live.
That's good.
Listen, I don't mean to sound as though you're always wrong just because you're a man, or to badger you about being more loving or less suspicious, or why don't you give more mink coats. I know sometimes you're badgered by girls who have the gimmies, both emotional and material. Let's talk about them for a moment. Is there a poor girl in your life? Somebody once told my husband, never marry a girl with more trouble or less money than you have. Sounds callous, doesn't it? But is your pretty pauper really doing everything she can about getting solvent, or is she just sitting on her pretty pauper's fanny expecting you to be the one from whom all blessings flow? This is America. I said that before, but she can get a job and be just as successful as you are. It happens all the time. If you're 60 and she's 25, well, that's one thing. And if you're 40 and she's 20, well, maybe you still have to offer her something besides you because of her youth. But if it's less of a December-May relationship and kind of more like March-April, you might consider this. A girl once called a very popular man about town in the middle of the night and said, darling, I'm so worried. I can't sleep. My rent is due. I've got all these bills to pay. He said, don't worry, darling. I'm sending something over right away to help you. An hour later, a messenger arrived with two sleeping pills. Brilliant. Another time you may want to say no is when she wants to get married, and you don't. This is assuming, of course, that you aren't already married, so there seems to be no first-rate reason why you're turning her down. If you don't mind losing her, it's no problem. Just say goodbye. But if you'd like to keep her, I suggest you don't knock marriage and say, oh, hell, nobody's happily married. You might try this instead. Janet, I adore you. I not only love you, I like you. You're great. I know you must think I'm some kind of a nut because I don't want to marry you, and maybe I am. But you know it isn't you. If I were a marrier, I wouldn't be able to resist you. Who could? So forget about all your friends you're comparing yourself to who are getting married right and left. They weren't dealing with a lunatic. I know it's important for you to be married. I know what you need, and yet, would you believe it? I know what I need. And it's just as important for me not to be married, not right this minute. There isn't any reason I can explain to you, but you know it is possible for people to want two different things, especially if they're men and women. I hope you'll stay with me. I need you like I need oxygen, but I don't need marriage right now. Please think about it, baby. Don't just take a stand because your pride says you have to and you've got to teach me a lesson. Punishing me isn't going to make it the way you want it. I love you. I love you with all my heart. Let's see what happens.
That's good.
All right. Let's go straight to the telephone, too, still. See if I can get my special guest, Auntie Vera Charles. I'm not, you know, I always used to hide the guest as if you can't see it on the fucking show notes. It's so stupid. I'm a moron, I think. Hello? Is this thing working? Hello? Hello? Oh. I didn't hear any ringing. That's why I got a little discombobulated. Sorry about to take so long getting ready. Would you believe it, Auntie Vera Charles? Vera Speaks. I haven't finished my pod show. God, what's wrong with me? I haven't finished my oatmeal yet. I only got two more bikes. So don't worry. Don't have a don't have a conniption. You shouldn't need a Xanax for this.
I'm not. I'm relaxing, darling.
So, you're in repose?
I'm in repose and relaxing. I'm on my wonderful four-poster gigantic canopy bed in my estate here in Woodland Hills.
Oh, well, fortunately, I have a brand new clip for that.
That's good.
Really?
That's good.
That's good. Hold on.
Hold on.
Hold on. You're welcome.
And I have this one, too. Friday.
Friday.
Oh, Friday. Fuck. I forgot to fix Friday. The ones I sent you, I sent it wrong because I forgot to send to make them monophonic. But that's okay. Wednesday is mono.
Wednesday.
Uh-huh.
Wednesday.
Wednesday.
And you heard the Helen Gurley Brown clip of the most recent one?
Yes, I did.
And what do you think of her advice?
I just thoroughly and completely astounded by this woman because I was under the impression that she was very much a feminist.
I was too.
And like Gooch said this morning when we were listening to this, that she is at her core
a whore.
She's this thing. This women are, you know, this women are second. Basically pieces of meat and the advice that she's giving these men are just disgusting.
I think she's just like a serious capitalist. Do you know she's still on the board of Hearst Publications to this day?
Have you seen her lately?
Of course. I put it on my album art all the time. But I have a friend that works for, I don't know if I should talk about this, but I don't care. I have a friend that works for Hearst. And for a Hearst magazine anyway. And he was telling me about the shit she does. You know, that she's just this, you know, very eccentric woman on the board. Everybody loves her. And she said this one friend of his was at a meeting with her. And she's, you know, she always wears, obviously, these eccentric dresses. She says, oh, Mrs. Gurley Brown or whatever, Ms., whatever you are, thing. I really like that atrocious, you know, poochy dress that you're wearing that makes you, you know, in your one breast. And Helen said, oh, thank you very much. I adore what you, you know, her, I just adore what you're wearing. Where did you get it? And she goes, Target. And Helen Gurley Brown goes, what's Target?
Oh, God. Of course. Of course.
What's Target?
This is a rarefied atmosphere we live in.
I think it's amazing. I mean, she's really just a good old fashioned robber baron style capitalist. I mean, when it was hip to make, you know, to rape women, she was all for it.
Uh-huh.
And, but I mean, I think her feminism, at least now that I'm looking at it, it's really not feminism at all. I mean, what she was saying is that women should speak out about their own sexuality. That doesn't mean they're a feminist any more than, you know, a dog when he gets a hard on is, that's a bad example, but when a bitch is in heat and sticks her vagina out to a dog, that makes that dog a feminist. You know what I mean?
I understand.
I can't talk. I'm an idiot.
It's all right, darling. It's fine. You need your oatmeal. You have to finish your last two bites. You'll feel better.
Okay.
This is my canis.
Yeah, I think that's the distinction, and that is an interesting point that I had not thought about before. What she was raising the consciousness of was the sexuality of women,
right.
which was non-existent in the 40s and 50s. Women were not supposed to enjoy sex.
Right. Well, you know, I was just watching Tristan and Isolde. Do you know that story?
No.
It's like the oldest love story, at least according to Joseph Campbell, is one of the oldest love stories, if not the oldest, because romantic love is a relatively new invention. I mean, it really came out of the Middle Ages. And before that, there really was no such thing. So people copulated, and there was lust, and then they were partnered, you know, but always for reasons of, you know, when they did marry, it was usually in order to bring two dynasties together or for convenient or families together in smaller situations. And it wasn't until the Middle Ages that that romantic love actually became discussed, and it was even made, you know, that people even, it was kind of like, it's almost like, you know, how it was for us as homosexual and lesbians, where, you know, we had to stay in the closet.
Right.
Until very recently, and you could argue whether or not you still have to, but in different places. But I think it's similar in that before like the Middle Ages, everybody was in that situation. Nobody could really express love, and it wasn't even really something that was talked about.
You know, my contention is that we have not changed since we were cave people. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the base, that core of what we were, the men hung with the men and hunted. The women nested in the caves.
Right.
And the only time they got together is when the guy ran up behind the woman and stuck it in, pumped it a while, made the baby, and then left it and hung with the guys again.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at current society, you'll especially – I mean, we're exposed to it all the time in the microcosm, which is the RVing world, with recreational vehicle world. Which
I didn't
is a
know
micro-
that was a world.
It is. Believe me, it is. It is
like,
a microcosm.
Like cruising, like those people that go on cruises all the time?
Absolutely.
Ugh.
But this is a microcosm of our society. And if you watch – and Gooch and I watch this with great – joy out our front window. Someone will arrive. A couple of RVs will arrive, and we'll find out, you know, by watching that these two RVs are traveling together. And without exception, there is never an exception.
Yeah.
The guys get with the guys and start doing the guys stuff, and the women get with the women and start doing the women stuff. The chairs are set up around the campfire. The chairs are set up around the picnic table. The women are all together jawing away. And the guys are all together sitting there
and
talking.
And what about the
maybe.
Fagulas?
The Fagulas, that's the sad part, is we were always in with this confused
the girls.
Where we were going.
With the girls, of course.
But there, well, we ended up with the girls. But there aren't many. There aren't. We have never. We've been RVing for 25 years, and we haven't ever met another male gay couple. We've seen a lot of dykey dudes.
Really?
We've seen a lot of your type. Yeah, but never one other gay male couple. Never.
See, I love camping, but that's probably because I'm a lesbian.
Yes, absolutely. But my point that you've steered me away from, which you're so good at because you're...
I know,
because
my friends hate me because of this. I got yelled at a Starbucks 2 weeks ago, like you wouldn't believe, for
so you're doing it again.
Yeah,
I can't believe it. I just want to make my
I'm
fucking
tangential.
Point, okay?
Go ahead. I'll shut up. I'll stick a thing in my mouth.
Stick some oatmeal in your face.
It's over.
I'm tangential as well. That
no
women...
Shit.
Hoedown. Mm-hmm.
Wait, I wasn't ready. I didn't have my hoedown fingers ready.
Hold on.
Okay, now I have them ready.
Women will gravitate to women. Men will gravitate to men because that's the natural. It happens. It just happens. The reason that we get together, the reason that men and women, and I'm not talking about gay people because we are the exceptions to the rule. The reason that men and women get together is not for companionship. It's for sexuality. And it's to fulfill that biological drive.
Well, but that's I don't know. I mean, I think that's true. That's the base function. But I think that's what I'm talking about as far as the Middle Ages and the evolution towards romantic love, because romantic love is something on top of that. It's like another layer of the brain, you know, in evolution, don't you think?
Well, I think it's more manufactured than nature. Now I have an interesting dichotomy in my thinking, because my parents have been married for over 60 years, and they can't stand being away from one another, and they're always together and always have been that way. They
right.
just
And you're the same with the Grinch.
I'm absolutely the same.
So why – but you think that's sort of nurture rather than nature – or nature rather than nurture? You think that?
I think it's a freak of nature. Because
but how could such a powerful emotion – and feeling be that's so powerful be
I don't know.
Be learned.
I really that for that I don't have an answer, but I ask you to look at this concept.
Mm-hmm.
Every single
oh,
one,
wait.
Every single mm-hmm. Hold on. Mm-hmm. Friday. Mm-hmm.
I wasn't ready for Friday.
Friday.
Jesus.
Okay, I'm ready for Friday.
You really are shitty today.
I know, I'm a whore. Okay.
Friday.
Every single straight couple that I know,
yeah,
the women have girls' night out, and the guys have the guy things where they get together and do the guy things. And
right, sure.
Right, go to the sports bar, whatever.
Well, except for the couples where the woman is married to a gay guy.
Well, you know, I'm not talking about the exceptions.
Oh, I won't interrupt anymore.
Hoedown.
Shit, I'm never ready. We have bed.
Hold on.
Okay. The problem is my hoedown is on the same track as you. So whenever I say hoedown, it blocks you. So I have to switch you to I'll switch you to the This Is My Panis track.
This Is My Panis.
Now, I have a question about that, because now I'm going to go tangential.
Yes. Yes.
Listen to you forever, as you well know. Uh-huh. Hold down.
Yeah.
And I've heard you talk about Panis, but I never knew what a Panis was, because I guess I must have missed the show where Panis was explained.
Well, it was more of an era than a show, than a particular show. A Panis, well, I think it's explained. Oh, well, I only sent you the short clip. I didn't send you the long clip from, you know, you wouldn't believe who sent me that. It's so shocking. Guess.
Who? Just, Wanda Wisdom or Cheryl Murkowski?
Cheryl, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, from her secret fat site. It sounds like one of those secret, you know, whatever, secret prisons, secret fat site. And, but a Panis is a, and I played it at the whole clip at the beginning of the show, so the audience is well aware. A Panis is the gigantic sack of skin left over when you lose a lot of weight.
Oh, an apron. They call an that apron, a skin apron.
An apron. But a Panis is, it might be a little different, but I know that hers, she explains in the clip that hers weighs about 40 pounds of water weight alone. And that's not even including the weight of the other substances.
I see.
I wish, you know, I used to have this rigged up so that the person I talked to on the other end could hear what I, you know, what I play through the software. But I just, it's such a fucking pain in the ass, and honestly, I don't even remember how I did it. But yeah. You'll hear it doing in the produced
Hold
program.
Hold on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hold on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so.
Yeah. My point being that I think that it's much more nurture than nature that men and women have relationships, not sexuality, because that I think is totally biological, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I think relationships are much more nurture than nature.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Because I the thought of having a night out, getting a night away from Gooch is so repugnant to the both of us.
But let's talk more specifically than relationship, because that can be, you know, relationships are very broad, and that can be, you know, forced relationships, things you don't want, you know, mother, daughter, shit like that.
Right.
But let's talk about romantic love instead.
Okay. Okay. What about it?
Would you say the same thing about romantic love?
Well, I think romantic love is much more perpetuated by the female of the species, mm-hmm. because I think romantic love comes from the nesting, the biological nesting imperative that females have.
But then I don't understand. It sounds so strange coming from a gay man, especially one that's been in a 25-year relationship and just got married last week.
Once again, I have to be careful how I put this.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the desire, the incredible strong desire to be with another person, to cling to another person, to stay with another person, has an awful lot to do with securities and insecurities of your own nature. I think the reason that Gooch and I have worked incredibly well for 25 years and that we're still as madly in love and all that sappy crap mm-hmm. as we are, which is the truth. It's sappy mm-hmm. crap, but it's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the reason it's lasted 25 years is because at the core of our beings, at the core of my being, my insecurities mm-hmm. are taken care of by him, just by a freak of nature, you know, by the fact that we met and that it happened to work out this way. My insecurities are taken care of by him, and my securities and my strengths take care of his insecurities. I think it just worked out. I don't think you can plan it. I don't think you can sit down and say, okay, well, I have a weakness here and you have a strength there, so we should get together.
It's interesting to me how you break down these sort of romantic things into analytical constructs, you know?
Because to me, truly, to me, everything is analytical.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think there's anything mystical about love. I was in a relationship for 8 years before Gooch, And I truly thought that was the love of my life. And I watched it grow, and then I watched it decay.
Right.
And I really saw – it was like I lived that experiment too. So in other words, I'm not – I'm Gooch's first long-term relationship.
LTR. So, hopefully
yeah,
last.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So he doesn't have the failed relationship experience like I have.
Uh-huh.
I watched love decay. So love isn't mystical to me. Love is a wonderful thing, and I'm a very romantic person. I mean, I write "I love you" in toothpaste on the mirror, you know, for him.
God. You know how much hate mail we're going to get from this show now.
I know, because it's sappy and disgusting.
Yeah,
but
because
so,
it's
know,
about love and not sex and prolapse,
and not hatred and prolapsing and Leops. Hold on, Friday.
I can't do all that right now.
Okay. Do it in post.
Yeah. No, anyway, I mean, I've been doing it. I just didn't want to do it then. It's nice that I have a button to replace my active listening.
Mm-hmm.
That's what, whatever that means.
Active listening is when you say it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Or you react. My mother does that all the time. Like, she'll say... Yeah, when you know what, it's always when she's really not listening, and I'll be like, oh, blah, 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 mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I hate when people say mm-hmm too much, because you know they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
It's just like the thing with the typing on the computer when you're talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
Or the clanking of the ice.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was either Pete or Clank.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Pete or Clank. It was, they're pretty good. Pete
they're
or
usually
Clank.
Pretty good. Pete,
they're usually
Clank,
pretty good.
Clank, 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 Clank.
Well, I
talk
to Pete, you know. I talked to Pete, but then he wasn't here, so I couldn't talk to him. What? You talked to him, but he wasn't there, so you couldn't talk to him?
Yeah, because I'm lying. Uh-huh. The situation was resolved within a couple hours after that phone call, but I didn't want to play that because that wouldn't have been very interesting.
No, but...
But what happened is, this is how I interpret it, is that... The Postmaster General's office, they had never communicated to the office I talked to when I talked to them. So what happened is, I think that they finally, that the guy sent a letter, because they're morons and they are the post office, so they still use regular mail. So I think he sent a letter to the Chicago post office telling them to deal with me. And then that's when they actually fixed it. It had nothing to do with those horrible phone calls. Because what happened is this lady Carmen called me from the central post office. She was very nice. She said, oh, well, you know what this is? This is a problem in the computer system, and we just need to take out the forwarding request from the computer, which is what I'd been telling them, of course.
From the very beginning.
And she's all about Pete and Clank and French fries and hamburger. I mean, those people just are so, I'm sorry, but stupid. Let's just say it. Everybody I talked to was rock stupid, and I'm sorry to the rocks that are smarter than those people. I'm very sorry.
I dealt with the exact same situation yesterday, and I talked about it on my show. I had a job on the Warner Brothers lot, and the way you get on the lot is that whoever is giving you that job or whatever calls the security gate or inputs in the security computer
right.
a pass.
I've seen Sunset Boulevard. Yeah. Well, they didn't use the computer, but okay.
No, they don't use a pass, but the gate's the same.
Mm-hmm.
So you drive up and you say, hi, I'm Vera Charles. I should have a pass. I'm working on the lot today.
That's
and
so they give fancy.
Give you
take a picture.
Hold on.
Okay.
No, you can't take a picture because you can't bring cameras on the lot.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So let me finish my story, because we never finished talking about love either, because we've gone off on tangents.
I was trying to sort of phase
steer us away.
Just because I don't want that much hate. I want to hear about this Warner Brothers business.
Well, I will. We could talk about relationships and not even bring in love and anymore, because I think it's a really interesting topic that to demystify the emotion of love. Because it's got all this – I think the mystification of it is what causes so many people so much trouble, because their expectations are so – are off. Okay, so Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
So I drive on the lot. There's two guards. The one guard comes out to me. I said, hi, I'm Vera Charles. I should have a pass. Now, very briefly, I have three names that my parents gave me, but I go by my middle
Auntie
name.
Auntie Vera Charles. So Vera.
Exactly. Perfect. Auntie Vera Charles. And I go by Vera.
Right.
And my professional name is A. Poor Vera face. Charles. Okay.
Yeah.
So I give this asshole my driver's license that right. says Auntie Vera Charles. And I'm waiting. As I'm waiting, the cars are backing up behind me. More and more cars are waiting to get on the lot. And I'm sitting waiting for this asshole in the guard kiosk to do his fun job. He comes out like 5 minutes later and he says, I'm sorry, you're going to have to go over there to the visitor center and find out if you have a pass over there because we don't have anything on the computer for you. And I said, you must have. I'm working here today. You must have a pass. I picked up an old pass that I had when I was on the lot the other day. And I said, look, see, here, I got a pass here. I was here the other day. There's got to be a pass. He's, no, you can't. You got to go over. Meanwhile, the guard behind him says, hold on. Hold on. Mm-hmm. Hold on. And he takes my license from the guy, and he tells the guy, go get the license from the cars behind. He goes in, comes back 2 seconds later. He goes, here's your pass. Here's your... I said, what was the problem? He said he was looking at the auntie. He didn't look at the Vera.
Hold on.
Because it says on here, you have a pass for Vera Charles. So this idiot was so stupid that he sees my last name with my middle name but can't connect that it's
and
me.
Even though, and he didn't even probably read the pass you showed him from the other day because
no,
that would have
no.
showed that.
He didn't. But that's how fucking stupid people can be.
Well, you know what my mother would say when I complain like that? She would say, Madge, that's why they... She'd say, Madge, that's why they work there. That's why they do that job.
Well, I'm telling you something.
Because they can't do it.
Yeah, they don't even do that well. Or he didn't even do that well, I should say. His friend did it very well.
Maybe that was Pete or Clank.
I don't know what the fuck it was, but it's just frustrating as all hell.
Is there only one entrance to the Warner Brothers lot?
There are several gates to any back lot, but each one is specified for a particular entrance.
Purpose.
An artist's entrance. Yeah, exactly, a purpose. Uh-huh. So there'd be the artist entrance, which is designated where you go if you're an actor, or if you go if you're a guest, you go to one particular gate, or if you've got deliveries, you go to another gate. So it just depends. And the Warner Brothers lot that I went to is called the Ranch, which is basically just a scaled down version of the big one, and it's down the street from it, and it's where there's other sound stages and mostly backlot stuff. Like, it's where they filmed Bewitched and I Dream of Jeannie and all that stuff, and so it's those streets and the houses,
the
know,
outdoor
false.
Shots.
Yeah, exactly.
So probably, I don't know, Desperate Housewives? No.
Well, I don't know where.
I don't know where they do TV now.
I don't know what is shot there now, but I know that a lot of stuff is shot there.
Because I know that the Desperate Housewives was the Leave It to Beaver Street, so I don't know where that was.
I think that might be Universal.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Leave It to Beaver.
Beaver.
Universal. Okay. Leave it. It's Beaver. Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. I just had a serotonin downswing. Hoo-hee, hoo-hee, hoo-hee.
What happens when you have a serotonin downswing?
Oh, nothing. I don't clean. What else?
Now, what else? Serotonin, what does serotonin do? Does it make you feel good in your brain? Is that what serotonin does?
It's a neurotransmitter, and honestly, I don't think anybody really knows what it does, but they know that it correlates with depression. And when you take lots of ecstasy, your serotonin receptors get fried, so it makes depression even worse. Until I don't know if it's really been determined whether or not you can rebuild them like the $6 million fucking man. But anyway, it doesn't. It's a combination of things. A lot of times it's subconscious thoughts that send me to that place. So I don't know. Maybe it was the beaver. I think it's because you mentioned beaver. Well, actually, I mentioned beaver. It got me a little depressed because I ain't seen but my own lately.
No, I can absolutely relate to what you're saying, though. That all of a sudden you'll get a feeling of
gloom.
Sadness. Yeah, of gloom or sadness or even doom. And it's like there's you have no idea where it came from. I often have to track my thoughts back. What the fuck led me here?
Right. And it's so elusive because it's so subconscious. that it's almost hard to believe that it can be caused by anything other than something physical. And I think that's how a lot of us get trapped in this world of chemical antidepressants. Not even though I am too, of course, but I think a lot of times, because depression feels so physical, we assume it is purely physical. And really, you know, mind, body, what's the damn difference? It's all the same piece of shit.
Well, yeah, and also the mind is in total control of the body. So, I mean, you know, the mind can tell your body that it can't function. The mind can blind you.
Mm-hmm.
You can be, you know, give you psychologically.
The mind can tell you not to deliver mail and to lie about you talking to Clank about it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, with some regularity.
Yeah, well, see, this is why this yoga thing is so good for me, because it's like in my world of fucked up psyche, it's sort of the only place where I have a significant amount of hope for betterment.
Uh-huh.
Because it is.
It's interesting. It's such physicality, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's all the same thing. I mean, the whole idea is to exert yourself physically in a very focused way in order to sort of basically remove the body from the puzzle, from the deal. You remove the body, so you're left at the end of this, at the end of the practice in this pose called Shavasana, which is basically translates as corpse pose, and you're pretending it's death practice. So by the time you've done all this stretching and all this self sucking, you lay down, you put a towel on your head. And or scratch your vagina with it if you got an itch. But eventually you put the towel on your eyeballs and you lay down. And because you've exerted yourself in all these weird, contorted ways, your body feels like this sack of potatoes. Now, the idea of this and the ultimate goal of this, according to Joseph Campbell, my very smart role model who's been dead for 20 years, is that it's supposed to take you to this state beyond consciousness and beyond even dream consciousness.
Campbell talked about yoga?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And to an ultimate state of dream, of beyond dream consciousness is what he calls ultimate consciousness or consciousness. So there, and this is what you're trying to get. This is the goal of yoga, is to get to this point where you're conscious and unconscious at the same time. And it has no really, it doesn't make any sense and there's no way to express it verbally. But it's, and I don't understand it myself. But that's where the Om comes from, because the O is waking life, as you and me talking now. The U is, because it's really ow, like A-U-M. The U is the U and is dream consciousness. So, you know, you're in your dream, you know, playing with ducks, that's the U. But the place where you want to get to in yoga is the M. And I mean, it doesn't have any physical, I mean, it doesn't really, it's just a symbolism. But the M is the, it's like when you're in deep sleep and you're really not conscious at all when you're in deep sleep. But in yoga, the goal is to be conscious in that state beyond consciousness where it's sort of a universal consciousness. So it's kind of like a global, universal, weird thing. And that's what you're trying to get to with all that physical exhaustion, as I understand it.
Now, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
When you have your knees at your ears.
Yeah.
And you can't hear the teacher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, are your lips long enough so that you really could do yourself?
It's not a question of how long your lips are. It's a question of how much practice you have in contorting yourself.
Are you practiced enough yet, or do you still have some more work?
You're assuming I've tried.
I know you've tried. You don't have to tell me.
That's
right. I know you have. Because no self-respecting lesbian wouldn't try, okay?
Uh-huh.
And I don't know why I know so much about lesbians, but it's just there's something about you and your lesbianism that I just relate to completely. So I know that you've probably strained some muscles
trying. When you see the video, this is how I'm going to sell the video. You will find out, perhaps. You will see, I mean, I won't actually self-eat. But I will get as close as I possibly can in the video, and you can be the judge of whether or not that means I can really do it. And okay. Hopefully I'll still have... If you see my... I'll have to do it live, because if you see my next snap, I'll need somebody to call the 911.
No shit.
Even though what good's it going to do?
At least you'll die happy.
No, see, that's the misconception. Like, having your mouth on your own genitalia or near it is of about as exciting as frying an egg. It's your own. It's like...
Well, I wouldn't know.
It's not like...
Well, you know, that's not entirely... That can't be entirely true because masturbation feels wonderful.
Oh, but so you're... Okay, so you're a... Yeah, but... Yeah, I'm just not going to talk about it anymore.
Well, it's because I know you have this thing. You have a thing with genitalia and mouths that we won't go into detail.
No, I don't. I mean, I do, but that's not why. The reason why I don't want to get specific is because it would give away the whole thing I'm trying not to give away.
Oh, I see. Okay, we'll talk off the air.
No, we won't, actually.
Okay, fine. Then I won't tell you any of my secrets.
Yeah, well, some are sicker.
Uh-huh. So, did you notice that I actually listened to and left a comment on Ms. Cheryl Murkowski's whorehole.org most recent program?
You know very well I did, because I wrote liar, that I wrote that you're lying underneath your comment.
Well, you know what? You're Let's not get see to this that. Is you, this Let, is showbiz. I'm I was doing showbiz.
I know you were being LA. You were being LA and shit.
It's because you think that on The View they haven't talked about what they've already talked about 1,000 times before they get on the air and talk about it?
I don't know.
They have a pre-show where they talk about everything they're going to discuss. Mm-hmm. So what you do is when you get on the air, because we're on the air now, we have to make it fresh, just talking about it.
But why do they do that? Well, doesn't that make it not less interesting? I mean, why do they do that?
Because they don't want to look stupid. Oh. And they end up looking stupid anyway. But it would be like, well, for example, you sent me files to listen to before we did the show today.
You're giving away my secrets.
Cut it out, then.
I gave you homework. I don't even remember what the homework was.
You gave me Helen Gurley Brown to listen to to discuss relationships, which we tangented off of. And then you gave me the little sound files of the Hodon and Friday and Yeah, you're pressing buttons now, aren't you?
I'm not.
Okay.
But I will now. Mm-hmm. Okay, now I did it.
How down. So anyway, here's what happened.
You're welcome.
Because I don't know how the subject came up, but Gooch and I, Gooch and I hate each other. There's no love at all. It's just we stay together for the children. So Gooch and I are sitting on the bed, and I think we had just listened to you, or we just listened to something, and whorehole came up. The dried prune came up in conversation.
Is it a dried fruit now? No longer a fig? What changed this description?
She's a dried fig, dried prune, dried date. She's
you
just
said
dried.
Fruit the other day, I thought. Dried fruit.
The dried fruit.
You said the reason we were listening to that dried fruit in the first place was ..
That's it, exactly. Was that Gooch said, why don't we give her Friday. A chance. You know, why don't we listen to, because, you know, you've never listened to her whole show.
Because life is so long. Why not use it to listen to her?
Yeah.
Life is too long.
We don't have enough to do.
Yeah.
And I really, you know, I would listen to a tiny bit of her show and it would be so repugnant to me that I'd turn it off. So I said, you know what? Let's do that. Let's you and I sit on the bed, and we're going to listen from beginning to end, regardless of how repugnant it is, and we'll listen, because you can't – it isn't fair to pass judgment on someone until you've given them an opportunity to display their stuff.
True.
So we listened to her most recent program where she calls the people for the vacations, the $99 vacations. And I absolutely loved the show because she was torturing and tormenting the assholes that torture and torment us.
Well, that's what she's been doing all along, though. That's the whole thing.
No, absolutely. That's bullshit. You don't call the Hover Round Corporation and get some poor schlub who's trying to make a living at Hover Round.
But okay, but I don't see, I see hardly if any difference, because the Hover Round is a scam. They're supporting these fat people, and they try, and the government ends up paying $10,000 for each of these fucking things, and then they don't even bother to, like, the government doesn't get any money back when the fat ass dies. So this, and it's a scam. They're basically ripping off Medicare with a loophole to buy these fucking fatty holders. So, you know, and the person who's selling them is just, you know, they're just, I don't see they're any less or more guilty than the person at the condo place. I mean,
it was a tropical vacation place.
Or whatever. It was a timeshare is what it really was. I mean, I think that was clear that they were really trying to sell a fucking timeshare.
In Orlando.
In Orlando. Yeah, who the fuck would want to move to fucking Orlando? I know so many people that go to Orlando. And I'm like, why in the Christ
would you? That's where Disney World
is. Yeah, I know that. And I get why kids would go there, families. But why the Christ would anybody else go to fucking Orlando? Oh, we're going to Florida. Where?
Orlando.
Well, you go to Florida for the fucking beach. Florida for the beach. And, you know, and the West Coast is bad enough. But Orlando, I mean, and gay people go there because that fucking Palmer House or Parliament House, where it's just this fucking outdoor fucking nasty bathhouse. I don't get it. I don't get Orlando.
I've not heard about this outdoor bathhouse.
You're West Coast, so I think this is more of a Midwest. Midwest people tend to go towards Florida. West Coast and Western Midwest, I think, tend to go to, you know, Hawaii and all that other shit. I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about. I wanted to hear about this Palmer House, which is the outdoor bathhouse.
There's nothing. It's just one of those nasty. I don't know. I've been to it, yeah, but it looks like one of those. I had to do research for a
archaeological
book report. I was doing a book
anthropological
report.
Yeah.
Right.
Hold on. Hold on.
So I was doing a book report, and but anyway, it looks like a road motel. What do you call the hotels? Was it a hotel or motel where the doors are all outside?
That's a motel.
Okay, so it's basically a motel. And
you know
courtyard.
what the derivation of the word motel is?
Motor hotel.
Hey, you knew it already.
Mm-hmm.
Then why didn't you know that it was called a motel with the doors outside if you knew the derivation of the word?
Because a hotel also is used for cars with motors.
Listen, right.
just
hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Right. Okay, so it's just basically a motel, a motel, with a big courtyard in the middle. And the difference is that everybody's gay, and everybody leaves their door open. And if they want to get fucked, they stick their ass in the air. It's an outdoor bathhouse.
But it's like Palm Springs.
Yeah, Palm Springs is fucking disgusting. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. But you know, that's not. Once again, there's a lot of disgusting things in Palm Springs. There's a couple of hotels that were nice, yeah. But most of the and believe me, I'm not knocking bathhouses. I lived at bathhouses before I married my husband, so I have nothing against bathhouses. Mm-hmm. But I think it's kind of funny that they call themselves hotels, and basically that's what they are.
They're called clothing optional.
Yeah, gay resorts.
But I've been to them in Key West, though. I have to admit, I like them there. I like the Key West.
I think I think they're wonderful if you're single and if you want to play. I that's fantastic.
Oh, but I went there with Gussie once, and I got in such big trouble because I was getting eaten out in the hot tub, and I thought she had gone to bed. She was hiding in the fucking bushes watching. Ooh, now, boy, was she mad at me.
Well, I wonder why. Did you have an agreement of monogamy, or did you have a
hell no? Agreement? We had an agreement of don't ask, don't tell. I mean, you can't have an agreement of monogamy when you live in two different states.
Then I'm sad to say that she had no right to get upset if that was the agreement.
She had no right to get outside and look. Whatever, who cares? It didn't really affect anything because we got over it, you know. You fight, you get over it.
Well, yeah. See, my relationship that I had before Gooch, it wasn't supposed to be, but it ended up being that we agreed to open it up. Yeah. It was a last ditch effort for us to try to save it.
With the relationship before the Grinch.
Yes. My relationship with the Grinch has been monogamy from the very beginning. Not that that's better than anything else. I'm not putting a value judgment on it. I'm just simply saying that that's the way we are comfortable with it, and that's the way it works for us. But my relationship prior to the Grinch, it started out as we wanted it monogamous and happily married and everything, but it just became decayed. And then as a last ditch effort, we thought, well, let's open it up and see if that'll save us. And no, that just drove the final nail into the coffin, basically.
Why did I get this weird? I just got a comment on my Yeast Radio from yesterday when Cheryl and I were talking about Wanda's penis. Yeah. The comment is from Xavier. It says, Wanda is like the pendulum on Big Ben.
There is no pendulum on Big Ben.
Really? Oh, wow.
And in actuality, Big Ben is the name of the, I think it's the name of the clock, not the tower. There's something. Yeah, I see that. Xavier says Wanda is like the pendulum on Big Ben. Well, that means that Wanda's non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he was being ethereal and.
I don't think he knew.
Oh.
I think he just.
Well, why man have
sweet
why
rectum?
Man have to have such a sweet rectum?
I wasn't going to read that comment, but there is another comment for you on Eat This Hot Show. There's only three comments. So I didn't. Beggars can be choosers. So my censorship criteria has become slightly well. You can read it for yourself, but I found it in good spirit, a good. What do you call it? You know, good humor, like not
mean. Oh,
that's
sweet. Yeah, I think. See, once again, it's hard because it's impossible to tell in writing one's intent. To me.
Right.
Without the winkies and all the stuff that you talked about.
But I think the key word here was amiable.
Yeah.
Vera isn't is a cunt, however, an amiable cunt. Congratulations on the wedding, Vera. Mine was at the end of July in a Catholic church in Poland. No one drowned.
That's very funny. It's amiable, by the way. It's not amiable.
Oh.
It's okay.
But my sir, and I can never say this person. It's a my Cyril. It's Michael something. I don't know. Whatever it is a straight. It was a straight wedding. Left that out.
I thought my Cyril was a woman.
No, I've talked to him on the phone.
Oh.
No.
Oh. Okay. Hold on. Mm-hmm. Hold on.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. So the key is, let's look at my calendar because I got to figure out how I'm going to deal with today. So the question is, do I still do laundry today or do I put it off for another day? Hold on for one more day. Layups. Yoga at the lake, 6:30 p.m. It's only two more weeks of this. It's so sad. And then it's over.
Two more weeks of what?
Yoga on the lake. You know, outdoor yoga, because, you know, I don't live in a warm climate. I live in the north, and they only do it until Memorial Day. So twice a week, they have this yoga class on the lake, and it's wonderful. Now, the teacher on, see, and I only went to the Tuesday night one starting last week, because I found it a convenient way to not have to deal with Mr. Loathing, you know.
Yes.
Mr. Wicked, so who I did see the other day, and I can give you
did
a
you
little
curse
bit.
Him out? Did you curse him out in Dutch?
No, I... He said, I walked into the room. He was standing there at the door because he's so insecure. He has to like be the first person to see who's coming in. And he's sitting there like on this, you know, IKEA footstool. And he stares right at me. And I stare right at him with my evil look. And you know that can be real evil. And he says, hey, boo, which I don't know what that means. I guess that's some new way to say hello to people you hate. He says, hey, boo. I just looked at him. Very seriously, I walked right past him and sat down. I didn't say a damn thing. Then after we talked about how much we love Seattle Sutton, but you know, deprive ourselves from her and her beets and her gazpacho and her bad chicken breasts.
Chicken.
After that, we sat down on the couch in the officey room, and he comes and he sits down next to me. He didn't say anything. you know, which I would expect because he thought I probably was giving him the silent treatment. And I noticed that he was wearing a little scarfy, striped scarf around his neck, kind of like a sailor. I said, "Oh, so we're a sailor today, are we?"
Oh, dear God.
He said, "Are you the fashion police?" And I said, "Yes." So,
fucking children. Goddamn little children.
But you know what? It's okay because I kind of accomplished what I wanted to. And granted, yeah, it's childish. But at least I accomplished something. I made it clear that, like, we ain't going to bond that way.
Is this the normal behavior at Seattle Sutton? This childish nonsense back and forth?
No.
Okay. So it's there just you bringing it out.
The normal behavior. There's no normal behavior. See, the thing about these types of programs is it's really hard to generalize because it's across the board. I mean, if you're a catty, queeny, bitchy person, you're going to go to a place where there's other people like that. That's the kind of meeting you're going to go to. If you're a happy in the morning person, drink fresh coffee, talk about how great your life is, lie through your teeth, then you're going to go to a meeting. I call it plastic sobriety. Like, it's just like plastic surgery. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. On the inside, they're just burning. Like that fucking, you know, Tammy Wynette song.
Uh-huh.
And so anyway, so if you're, you know, if that's the kind of person you are, you're going to be in a meeting full of those people. So there's really no, I can't generalize. Now, this particular sect, yeah, I would say it tends to border on the queenie side. But see, there's a difference between catty mean and catty nice. Like, I think, despite popular opinion, that when we're on Eat This Hot Show, it's catty nice. I think my show is catty nice in general. I think people don't necessarily get it. And sometimes when I talk about people outside the scope of the audience and the participants, then I can be catty mean, especially when I hate the person. But I think it's catty nice.
There is what's very interesting about this whole experience for me is that there is a very fine line that one walks when one is being catty in general.
Right.
And if you're not really careful and if you're not on your game and if you're not, for example, when we blew up the other day on Eat This Hot Show, I was very vulnerable because I was mm-hmm. having some very private problems.
Right, and I hadn't taken my Wellbutrin that day, as I later found out.
Right. What? Okay.
What day? Wait. What day of the week do we record? Do we record that show? What day of the week?
We record on Wednesdays. Let me
Wednesday.
Check.
Wednesday. Oh,
I think it's Wednesday.
No, Wednesday.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Wednesday. Wednesday. Wednesday at 1 o'clock is when we record, or Wednesday. 11 o'clock your time.
Okay, sorry.
1 o'clock your time.
You may continue now that I've been able to use that clip.
Oh, Wednesday. Oh, see, you were manipulating me again.
Wednesday.
And my heart and mind was open to you, and you used me.
Wednesday.
This is what I'm talking about.
Wednesday.
So you were talking about your bad mood that you were already having, and what?
Well, I think that
the fine line.
There is a when here's I want to get an example here.
Okay.
When Gooch and I first got together, he came from a horrible background. No, he really did. His familial background was hideous. He lost his parents very young, and he was raised by a sister who was just a tyrant and went from one family member to the other, and their way of communication was snarking at each other. That's the way they dealt, and it wasn't with love. It was with nastiness. It was snarky.
Right.
And so, and I had just come off of a relationship that had decayed into a place of not nice. It just wasn't nice and pleasant. So when Gooch and I very first got together, our playing with one another, it was never from a place of being angry, but the way we played with one another was very snarky. And it wasn't good. It wasn't healthy. And it changed. It evolved quickly away from that because snarky is really dangerous unless you've got both hands on the wheel and you're very careful of what speed you're going. Snarky can take you in places that you don't want to go. And I hesitate, you know, we kind of fall into the snarky characters because that's the characters that we are kind of on Eat This Hot Show, as we snark with each other. Even the blissfully precious and sweet Wanda Wisdom, who loves the world, becomes a raging cunt on Eat This Hot Show.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think you have to be very, very careful with snarkiness because it can, with just, because, you know, we're very sensitive people. I can talk about myself now, and I know it. I know you are too, but I won't talk about you. I'll talk about me. I'm very, very sensitive, and I'm hurt very easily. I can be as snarky as the next guy. I can appear to be really strong and opinionated and everything. But the core of myself is very, very, very sensitive. That's just the way I've always been. So the snarkiness, the humor-filled snarkiness, it still can hurt a little bit. You know, I'm not being very eloquent, and I apologize for that, but In every piece of snarkiness, there is a kernel of truth, and in every piece of snarkiness, there is the potential to hurt a feeling.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And so snarkiness is fun and snarkiness is great, but I think it's a lot more powerful and a lot more dangerous than a lot of people realize.
I think it's a good litmus test for how serious people take themselves. You know, I think sometimes people take themselves too seriously, because you're right. When you do make these snarky comments, people get, you know, there is definitely an element of truth.
Right.
And, when I call Wanda Wisdom pan face, though, I mean, there's hardly, some of them are just so absurd.
Like, what's pan face mean?
Walk face. Well, when she first lost weight, she had some jowls, okay? But, you know, I didn't really notice them, to tell you the truth. And then Cheryl mentioned it, and it turned into a walk face. And then it turns into, like, this recurring theme. And God knows where it comes from. But does Wanda Wisdom really have a face that looks even remotely like a pan or a walk? No.
No.
But then sometimes it does have an element of truth, like... I don't know. I think sometimes it's very distant, but if you're secure in yourself, then I think you have a lot less chance of the snarkiness going over the edge.
But are any of us that secure? I mean, if I took it too far with you the other day, and
mm-hmm.
So regardless of how secure of a person you are, that still was hurtful.
Well, sure.
You know what I mean?
It's not like you're either insecure or you're secure. There's just, and then not everything has to do with it. I mean, I don't think that one had much to do with how secure I am. It was just like, you know, I was just talking about something and I just didn't want to be interrupted and I didn't feel like, you know, and I was like, whatever. And I was misinterpreting your intentions as mean-spirited. So, you know, it's not all a rule. I'm not saying that that's the only rule about snarkiness and how it affects. I was just sort of generalizing and saying that I think, I don't know why. I mean, why do we even do snarkiness in the first place? I guess because it's just, I mean, it's definitely pretty common in the gays, you have to admit.
Yeah, that's, I never really hung. See, my friends were all theater people. And yeah. And theater people
are retarded.
Yeah, we are retarded.
The goody goodies.
No, we're not goody goodies. Oh. We weren't. I didn't hang out with the pretty snarky gay boys. That was never my thing. I was never around the pretty snarky gay boys. So yeah. I didn't gain that ability or get that gift.
Mm-hmm.
And snarkiness is not where I'm most comfortable. I mean, we've talked about this before, that people think that I'm this different person because they've listened to Vera Speaks and then they listen to Eat This Hot Show and they think that I'm this totally different
person. Yeah, we all get that, though. Well, I get that anyway, yeah.
And it's absolutely not true. It's just that in the forum of Vera Speaks, the snarkiest I get is when I'm playing back and forth with my conscience. You know, that's as snarky as I get.
Oh, that's the question. Yeah, I had a question I wanted to write down, and that.
What's that, darling?
You reminded me. Why is your conscience so obsessed with going to AA meetings?
He wants to make sure that he stays on the right path. He's new to it, you know, and anytime you're new to something, you're kind of obsessive about it.
Okay, but your conscience is your conscience. It's Andy Vera's conscience.
Right.
So I'm curious as to how your conscience affects your consciousness.
I've constantly battled my conscience my whole life.
Uh-huh.
My conscience has always been a voice in my head that has really truly known the right thing to do. And if I follow what my conscience says to me, I'm usually on the right path, because my conscience pretty much has always known what's right and what's wrong.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
So your conscience, so what you really should have done instead of getting married is parked cars?
No, I did that to my conscience. I sent my conscience away to park cars. And I also think...
But
I really,
see, I don't
really
get that at all. Why would you send your conscience away at this pivotal point in your life?
Have you ever heard the expression overthinking?
Sure I have.
Okay, I think you're overthinking this.
You're underthinking it.
Okay, well, tell me why.
Well, because it's your conscience.
Right.
So it does things. It's part of you. And
right.
I think you've separated it because you gave it a voice.
Okay.
You've made it, you've over-animated, what do you call it when you give, I tried to fucking find this word, it took me 20 minutes on my show the other day, and now I lost, personification, whatever.
Uh-huh.
You know, you're over, not over, because that makes it sound like it's a negative thing, but you've personified this conscience, like it's one of the cartoon voices you do, cartoon characters, rather, that you do. And I think your conscious person, your Andy Vera-ness, has sort of forgotten that is really part of you. It's like your conscience. So
yeah.
If it does things like park cars when you're getting married, there's got to be a reason for it. It's ashamed. You're ashamed of your relationship. That's why you send it to A to park cars. I mean, I know it sounds absurd, but you see, this is the kind of thing. See, this is what... This is the kind of shit. This is the kind of shit that I have to go through when I have to figure out why I'm depressed, because it can be so far. The reasons for being depressed could be so far removed. The subconscious mind is so powerful. This is just my own belief that it has to mean something.
So you think that because I have personified my conscience and given him a. Not only a voice, but a very loud, obnoxious voice.
Yeah.
That I need to listen to my conscience.
Of course
more than
you do. Well, no, not any more than anyone else does. But I think you need to listen to it. And I think that the danger of turning your conscience into an actual different voice is that you can forget to listen to your conscience, because it really is your conscience, even though it's become this animated mess.
Well, I would be afraid to put that much thought into it because I'm going to be like sitting down and doing another show and now I'm going to be afraid, really afraid.
I think it'll be good. I think it'll be like Dinner with Andre,
it's weird. I tell you, it's a weird. The thing about the whole conscience situation is it came about extremely organically in that I found that I was saying really stupid things on the when I was doing the podcast. I'd say something really stupid.
Right.
And as we all self-censor, you know, that voice in my head was going, God, that what you said was really stupid. But then all of a sudden I did a voice saying out loud.
Yeah.
That was stupid. So that's how the conscience came about, is like just kind of birthed out of my head. I don't know even where I was going with that. Other than it really
sort of a chorus.
Exactly, mm-hmm. A Greek chorus.
Mm-hmm.
He's constantly he's the one here it is. I think this is it.
Okay.
When I meet someone, I will be the one that makes the first fat joke and the first bald joke so that I get it out of the way and I'm the one that did it.
Yeah.
So that you don't get an opportunity to hurt my feelings by calling me either fat or bald, because I've already done it.
I see.
Okay. With the conscience, no one's going to say, or they'll write in a comment and say, that was really dumb, Vera.
Well, because, it sounds like your conscience is really more of a critic.
Oh, absolutely. My conscience is a critic. My conscience keeps an eye on me.
Maybe you should call it Mr. Ebert.
Well, I just find it fascinating that the issue of it being my conscience has given you that much thought.
Well, as my father would often say, Madge, you have too much time on your hands.
No, you have to think about things like
that. No, I like to take
things. Dads say the sweetest, most supportive things, you know.
I like to take, yeah. I mean, I just, sometimes it's fun to take things literally and explore them. And I think this is where, I do think there's something there. I mean, I understand what you're saying about the critic and stuff, but the fact that you've labeled it your conscience and it has evolved as a conscience, I mean, the AA thing is clearly related to that in some way. I think it's worth exploring.
Well, you know why he went to AA?
Why?
Because on my 100th anniversary show, he got, for the first time ever, got drunk out of his mind and really made an absolute embarrassment out of himself. And so the next day, he immediately looked into a meeting in AA.
Right.
So that's why, because he had an event that led him there.
Right.
Okay. And also, he's constantly exploring everything.
Okay, we're going to wrap up, but I just want to say that just now, the audience and you, when you listened to it, heard a ding sound, which was my email, and somebody, I think it was that Xavier again, he must be on the coke, sent me a... And what's weird about this is I looked at it, and I didn't even think that this was even remotely abnormal that somebody would email me this until I thought about it. I'm like... But anyway, it's a gloved hand with a blue latex glove, a hand with a blue latex glove holding a vaginal speculum. And that's also that where the handle is blue, but the speculum itself is clear. And the title of the email is Vaginal Speculum Says Quack, because it looks like a duck. I'll send it to you. And then you can look at it right now and tell me what you think.
All right.
And then we're going to end, because this has gone on way too long, even longer than Ethan's hot show. Good Lord. Why have I been doing shows almost every day? This is 67 minutes so far. Okay, the email has left. It's on the... It's in the Willy Wonka machine, and it's on its way to you.
Okay.
It's Willing Warrior's birthday today.
Whose birthday?
Willing Warrior. He used to be an active listener. I haven't talked to him in ages. Very good-looking man from San Francisco. He used to live in Chile.
Oh.
Yeah.
You find those swarthy Latins attractive, don't you?
He's not Latin, actually. He's an American. He was just living in Chile for a while because he made a lot of money selling his condo in New York. So, the reason we became friendly is because he left. It should be there. He left me a message.
Email or Gmail or Skype?
Auntie Vera.
Okay, it hasn't gotten here yet.
No, the Skype. I mean the Gmail.
It hasn't come yet, you whore.
But the reason he and I became friendly is because he left me a message saying how much he hates when I chew and how disgusting it is when I chew on the show.
Oh.
And I remember specifically, in fact, I was in L.A. at the time because I remember, you know how sometimes you can associate... things you're listening to with places you're at, you know?
Yeah.
And I was at my friend's, it was the last time and one of the only times I was in LA at my friend Nicole's house in her kitchen eating an orange. That's what he was complaining about. And Irina Slutsky wants me to go to this fucking Vloggies thing, which is in LA in December.
Oh.
And it's Vloggies and Pixelodeon.
Okay, it just came. We'll have to talk about that if you're going to be out here in December. Yeah, okay. I don't know. Oh, it does look like a duck.
Yeah. Isn't that kind of weird, though?
And the message was, vaginal speculum says quack. That's just the subject.
Yeah, what do you think about it?
Well, I know why people would send you shit like this, because all you fucking talk about, especially when you're with that dried fig, all you talk about is layups and vaginal layups and your layups and your vagina does stinks and hurts and smells. So why wouldn't people send you things that have to do with vaginas? It makes sense.
Okay.
They think you're going to get a chuckle. See, here's the deal. Uh-huh. And I can speak because I have gone from fan to friend. Okay?
So which are mutually exclusive, by the way.
They are, absolutely. Let me tell you something. Once the friendship starts, the fan ends immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. No, I still listen to your shit. Because you make us laugh so much, because Madge Weinstein is a hysterical lesbian, and she says really funny shit, that I think people have a natural kind of desire to make Madge laugh. And so I think what happens is like, I would say, to grant some grace here, that this fella said, oh my God, look at this. This vaginal speculum looks like a duck. I'm sending it to Madge. Maybe she'll get a chuckle out of it. So I think maybe that's what happens.
Well, and I think it did. I wouldn't call it a chuckle, though, but it definitely made me I thought, what the fuck is this? Which is a form of chuckle.
Uh-huh.
Like, ugh. What really made me laugh today, though, was when Cheryl sent me that Panis clip, which you'll hear in full at the beginning of this program.
Well, Cheryl just cracks your ass up. That's a bit matter.
She's my retarded prune of a muse.
Uh-huh. I don't have to understand it. I just have to accept it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I have an audition to go to, and you want to get rid of me anyway.
I want to get rid of you, but I want to have you hang on because I want to ask you one quick question if you have time.
I absolutely have time.
Okay, so thanks for being on the program, and get fucked, and bye. And bye to tell your conscious and your Grinch I said hello.
I'll do that both.
And you your ugly. Dog. Okay. Hang on. Bye, audience. Bye, audience.
Bye, audience.
That's good.
Please don't worry about an unwanted pregnancy.